Welcome to Shift Talking, a podcast where we explore the art and science of behavior change. I'm your host, Davina Hain, a mental health coach and founder of A Steady Space. Join me as we discuss actionable tips, inspiring stories, and expert insights to help you create lasting change once and for all. Now, let's get to the Shift Talking. Welcome to episode 6. Today was supposed to be about the final acronym in our shift, RT, our transformation of self. And I experienced a loss this past week, and I wanted to share a little bit about that before we get into this. My grandmother passed away last week, and there's so much to it because, one, she was 100 years old and incredible. And I am so deeply grateful that we all got her for as long as we did. And while I could go on and on about her life, her experience, the general badassery that she existed within, I more so want to talk about how we have been able to navigate this with our children along the way. So my husband and I, we share two boys. They're 4 and 7 years old. And leading up to my grandmother's passing, we kind of did our best to prep them little by little over the past probably year, because she was on the tail end of dementia. She was in end-stage dementia, and they had really only ever known her as not her. And outside of speaking to our children about the death of both my and my husband's fathers, and the passing of my brother, and then, of course, you know, our dog died about 2 years ago now. And so our dog's passing was really our kids' first real introduction to death and the finality of it. And so I want to share a little bit about the way that we navigated this. And I am not a child development expert. I am not telling you how you should approach the concept of death with your children by any means. I'm more so just sharing our experience in hopes that it makes sense to you, and in hopes that maybe it helps kind of demystify this entire process and maybe just give an alternative approach that you may not have considered and or maybe weren't asking for, but we're here nonetheless. So I had been exposed to the concept of death for as long as I can remember. And while I'm grateful that my family didn't shield us from the concept of death, I also recognize how ill-prepared I was within it, right? I didn't get enough guidance. Like, I was basically my family's shadow in their experience of death. And I say that because we were brought to funerals. I saw my grandfather, you know, during his viewing. And there was so much there that I more so just went to these experiences and then didn't really know what to do with them. I had these really big emotions. I watched the grown-ups around me kind of just respond in the way that they did. And I wasn't quite coached through how to navigate it. And so as my children have been exposed to more death than I would have wanted for them to be exposed to, not in actuality, but in recognizing and talking about my father, my father-in-law, my brother, I want to be able to coach my children through these things. And it seemed like a really beautiful opportunity here to do that when it came to my grandmother. So we all, my whole family, we all banded together. We learned that she was estimated at a few more days, and we all went out to LA to spend her last days with her. My husband and I discussed it at length about what this means. I was taking the boys solo because my husband had to stay back and work. And I, of course, had to discuss with my husband about what he's looking for and any kind of hesitation that he had in exposing our children to her at 100 years old, in end-stage dementia, in a mostly non-responsive state, in a definite non-verbal state, and going with the inevitability in mind, consciously knowing that she was going to pass during our visit and that we would ultimately stay for a funeral. So my husband and I sat down, we shared what our hopes were in this, what we were really looking to achieve in it. We really weighed the pros and cons of exposing them to this and determined that this is kind of the one guarantee that we have in our existence, and they will experience much loss throughout their lifetime. And we have an opportunity here to kind of demystify it for them, to allow for this to become an exposure that helps them prepare and know what this looks like, and allow for this to be, of course, while tragic and ultimately sad, it's a loss, how we can kind of normalize this process for them. So when we decided to do this, we kind of did an inventory of our upbringing and what we feel like our families around us did really well in navigating these topics and what we could have used more of. And that became just discussion around it. I didn't know what to feel with losses. I didn't know how to express my fears around the finality of it. I ended up developing such a deep fear of death because it was such an unknown, and I had seen it just rock my family to its core time and time again. And I carried so much fear that, one, I would be the cause of this, that I would have this like untimely death and cause so much despair for my family. And that really like rocked me. There was the other part that was the finality for me and what my experience would be like after my own death. That's fucking terrifying sometimes, you know? So I had developed all of this into very anxious tendencies. I was a very anxious child. I am still working through, you know, this baseline sense of anxiousness that I tend to live my life within. And I want to be able to remove that for my boys. I don't want my boys to not be emotionally intelligent. I want them to be emotionally literate, be able to hold space for really big feelings, and know what to do with them. So once my husband and I determined that we really were on the same page, that I would of course be the one primary with them, I would be the one creating these narratives, I would be the one coaching them through this entire experience, and feeling confident that my husband had full trust in my ability to do so, that he had trust in my judgment of what would be appropriate and helpful and beneficial for my boys to be exposed to and what wouldn't. And I ultimately have to say that me and my husband being on the same page about this was huge. One of the things that made this entire process so much easier for me was that I knew that he supported me and that he believed and trusted in my ability to navigate my boys through this. So one of the things that I did was expectations. I am huge on expectation management. I fundamentally believe that that is one of the greatest cause of our suffering in our existence, is failed expectations or not recognizing that I had them, and then ultimately being failed, right? So I wanted my boys to go into this entire process knowing what they were walking into. So we talked about it often. I didn't use any phrasing around passed away, sleeping, heaven, anything like that. It was, she died. Her body stopped working and she died. So as we were talking it through, I let them know that we are going to go see her. And while we are visiting, she will die. And we will stay and we will bury her. So the first day that we got there, we stayed in this like full-blown roach motel in Calabasas, but it was something cheap. It was nearby. That's really all that we were looking for. We booked it on very short notice, and our comfort wasn't exactly the most pivotal thing. We knew that we would be spending all day every day at my aunt's house where my grandmother was living, and we were basically just using it to sleep. So we woke up, went over, and I let my boys know, hey, we are going to go see her. I'm going to go in the room first. I'm going to see what kind of state that she's in. I will come back to you and describe her to you. And then you can decide whether you go in. And so that's what I did. We had just seen her a couple months prior. And they had already been a little bit like more aware of what to expect, right? So I go in. I see her. I go out to them, and this is how I described her. I said, okay, she is in her bed. Her skin has less color than it did before. Her eyes are closed. She's breathing with her mouth open. She has lost more teeth. She is very thin. And she doesn't look super healthy. You can touch her if you'd like. You can kiss her if you'd like. She can hear us. She isn't opening her eyes, and she is not speaking. She won't be getting up from the bed. She might make some noises that we haven't heard before, but ultimately, she will know that we are there, and she has no pain. She is comfortable in her bed. So once I described that, I asked them both if they wanted to go in, and they both said yes. So we went in. I showed them as much normalcy as possible. They walked in. There was still a little bit of that, like, okay, yep, like that's where she is. That's what she looks like. That's what this is. But it didn't really seem like they had a level of, like, shock come in. They weren't, like, surprised by what they saw by any means. I showed them normalcy. I went in and treated her as I normally would. I gave her love. I kissed her forehead, her cheek. I held her hand. I kissed her hand. I talked to her as if she were responsive to me. And that was the only thing that was missing, right? So they got to see me sit next to her, me show them so much comfort around my experience, normalizing it, and letting them know kind of like, this is what we're going to be doing. We're going to sit here. We're going to hang out with her. The whole family will be coming in and out. And that's what the plan is. So for the next 3 days or so, we spent all day at my aunt's house. We did our best to make it fun and still show them that, like, this isn't all tragedy, that we are still living our lives, that there's still room to laugh and talk and chat and have fun. And so they went in the pool. We ordered in food. We got bagels and donuts. And, you know, we spent quality family time. We have a massive family. And so they were around all of their cousins. So as things were progressing, I did remind them often, if you don't see me, that's okay. Go choose this person, this person, this person to ask for anything that you need. I needed them to know who to go to if I was otherwise unavailable. So that also allowed for that too, because then no matter where they were, I would go to them and tell them exactly where they could find me. I wanted them to have as much comfortability and confidence and normalcy as possible. So I gave them as much direction as I could in letting them know what's happening, what's going to be coming up next, and what to expect. On the day of her passing, we all went over there and we knew it would likely be that day or the next. We spent time with her as we did previously. My boys saw people crying, saw them laughing, saw them fighting, saw, you know, a full range of the human emotional experience, and that was the point. So as she was in the process of passing, our family was called into the room, and my 7-year-old said, I want to come. And I looked at him dead in the eye, and I said, are you sure you want to be here for this? She's dying now. And he said, yes. So he came into the room with me. He watched his great-grandmother take her final 2 breaths. He heard all of us cry, hold space for each other, hug and kiss, love on her and love on each other, and kind of just sit in it. I watched him looking around the room, seeing how other people were reacting, responding. We each took our opportunity to just express how we were feeling raw in that moment. Good, bad, indifferent, ugly, all of it. And so once she passed, we each took time with her. And during that time, while someone else was in with her, my younger son came up to me and he asked if he could go swimming. My elder looked at him and said, now is not the time to have fun. And my younger looks at me as if asking why. I tell him, honey, she died. He says, she died? In her bed? Did her body disappear? And I realized then that, one, it was a very good question. And two, that part was maybe something that I hadn't quite touched on yet. He immediately asked if he could go see her. I made sure that he understood exactly what he was walking into. And he said yes. And so I said yes. And so myself and my 2 sons sat in the room with her. And I told them to ask any question that they want. They, one, didn't understand how her body could still be here and she technically isn't. And what does that mean? I explained that our bodies stop working and what makes us alive has left her body. What makes us who we are has left. Her spirit, her soul, like a flower. When we pick a flower, it stays alive. And then once it dies, you can see that the life is gone from it, but then the flower remains. Another way I described it was like a battery in one of their toys, and that eventually the battery stops working. And when it comes to us, we can't recharge it. So the toy still exists, but it doesn't have the life that it did before. I explained that her spirit, her soul is energy, and that there are multiple different theories around where it goes and what that means. Whichever one makes the most sense for them is what their truth can be. It's what they can choose to believe. I shared that what I choose to believe is that her spirit, her soul is somewhere else in the universe, and that's really all that I know. They both expressed a slight discomfort in seeing her body there and expecting her to move, and she wasn't moving. And I told them, I know, it's weird, right? Like, it is a very weird thing. They didn't express fear. They didn't express that it was very comfortable, but they didn't express discomfort either. They had the choice of coming to the funeral. It was 2 days after her passing. We had previously been to the cemetery for my father and my brother on their birthdays, and we set out a blanket. We have like a picnic there with them. So they were already familiar with the idea of a cemetery and what that means and what it looks like. But this was, of course, ultimately their first funeral. We went to the funeral. They were both wanting to be there, wanting to attend. What I explained to them was that we are going to go into this room, just our family. There is going to be a rectangular wooden box that her body will be in that box. We will sit in this large room. People will go up one by one or in groups up to this podium where this microphone is, and we will tell stories and say things about her. I told them to expect people to laugh, people to cry, people to not show any emotion or have anger come through, arguments, all of these things. I told them that any emotion that comes up during grief, during sadness around death, is normal. They held space during the eulogies. They gave comfort. They saw me crying. I made sure to show them that I was not in distress by giving them a little wink or a gentle smile, squeezing their hands, holding my youngest on my lap. And then once that was done, I told them, hey, now we're going to go over to the grave where we will lower the casket, lower that rectangle with her body into the ground, and we will cover it up with dirt. They had questions about what that means, about whether we would ever take the body out afterward. I described to them that we become part of the earth. So we bury our bodies because there's no life in them anymore. We bury our bodies in the ground and we become part of the earth. No other questions were asked. It's now been about a week and a half since the funeral. They are still asking questions about her here and there. They are speaking very matter-of-factly, but not crudely about her. They requested from my husband that they buy me a card because they could see that I still was carrying sadness. And they wrote really beautifully telling me that they were sorry that my grandmother died and that they are sad when I'm sad and that they hope they can give me love when I'm sad. Hugs, kisses, those types of things. I'm deeply proud of the way that my husband and I navigated this. I'm so impressed with the way that my children have. And I'm grateful that their first exposure to death was not distressing nor traumatizing, that it wasn't necessarily normal, but it was normalized. While I am grateful that I was exposed to death as I grew up and I wasn't quite shielded from these things, I was deeply traumatized by watching my father die when he did. I was in my early 20s and he wasn't ready. And so being there, watching him die from cancer in front of me, take his last breaths, was something that jolted me in a way that I still to this day don't know that I've recovered from. The image of that is permanently branded into my brain. And I desperately did not want that for my boys. I didn't want their first real experience in death to be when they're older and not know what to expect. God forbid it be me or my husband or anyone super close to us. So while we won't quite know how this truly affected them for quite some time, we navigated this collaboratively and as part of a team. My boys are showing fortitude and resilience. They got to witness and hold space for really big emotions and see that even during some of the saddest of times, there's still room for fun and joy and smiles and laughter. That crying isn't something to shy away from, and people who are crying are not people to shy away from. That we can be crying and still be okay, and we are allowed to not be okay while we are working to become okay. They both have shared that it wasn't distressing, that it wasn't scary. They both shared that they felt prepared and comfortable with what was happening. And while I hope it's a very fucking long time before they ever have to deal with this or be exposed to this again, what we know is that it's inevitable. And I hope that this helped them kind of dip their toe into the deeply confusing and unclear experience of death. While we know the finality of it, there's so much that we don't know. And I want them to be okay with not knowing. I want them to know how to sit in and sit with heavy emotions and be able to work through and process them through afterward. Of course, our next episode that was to be this one will be about transformation of self. I didn't feel super comfortable going right into that without sharing my experience and my loss, and also sharing how this type of loss allows for fortitude to come through. And everything I do here, by putting myself out there, by becoming somebody that I think is worth listening to when it comes to this work and how to approach it and how to view ourselves and forgive ourselves, so much of this I learned from her. And I carry the qualities of her that I respect deeply, that I desperately miss, and that I actively grieve my boys not being able to learn directly from her with me. This was a woman who gave zero fucks and somehow gave all of them at the same time, but she knew where to direct which one. I learned fortitude through her, and I will continue to carry her with me because she is part of me. I came from her. And if not for her, my entire family would not exist. She was our matriarch. I respect her. I love her. I'm grateful for her. I'm relieved for her. And I carry her with me through everything. Thank you for listening. This session, this episode, not session, but sure felt like a session. This session was for her and with her. And even in her last breaths, she taught my boys a beautiful lesson of life and love and death. I hope that you find this helpful if you are a parent of young children or older children and are looking for different ways to navigate this, right, wrong, or indifferent. I don't know. This felt right for us, and that is why I feel good within it. Even episodes like this will still be about your empowerment, one shift at a time. Stay steady, and I will see you in episode 7 for Transformation of Self.